76. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 62 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tide or Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome into the Gary Harris Show for this Thursday. Boy, November's just flying by. November 20th already, a week from Thanksgiving. My gosh, Chase, I don't know what to do. Stop, slow down. My Lord, holiday season is already on top of us. Gary Harris, Chase Brumfield with you for the next 2 hours, talking sports and more here on the Big Tide, 100.9 FM, 1230 AM, WTBC. Driving in this morning, I had an observation listening to Wimp and the Vinegar Tip. I'm thinking, man, how difficult a job is it to do to follow the Vinegar Tip? But I guess somebody's got to do it. Might as well be me. You know, somebody's got to follow the Vinegar Tip up every day. You know what I mean? It takes a special host to be able to follow that segment. But we're able to do it. We'll try to trooper on this morning. Hey, got a great show on tap for you today. In fact, we are loaded. I know that this week we have been heavy on phone calls, but let me go ahead and tell you, if you're going to call today, call early if you can in this first half hour, because we are packed with guests. I'll run it down for you here in just a second. First, though, I need to tell you, as always, this hour of the Gary Harris Show is being brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Member-owned and not-for-profit, it really is just a better way of banking. I encourage you to find out more. Why don't you stop by and see them at one of their 38 locations across Alabama and one branch in Northwest Florida. We're ready to serve you, including the main office right here in Tuscaloosa. Or you can find out more at alabamacu.com. That's alabamacu.com. Alabama Credit Union. Loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. See if you're eligible for membership. Then join today and feel good about your money. And pull extra change in your pocket. All right, Chase, before we get to today, boy, yesterday was fun. We had, one of our great callers and listeners, Ragged Glory, had asked for his birthday, his 68th birthday, if he could come and sit in the control room with Chase. So he came up for the second hour, said that was a bucket list item for him. And, we all had a good time with it. And I think all of the listeners and callers enjoyed knowing that he was getting to do that, and that he really enjoyed it. And we were glad to do that for him. And then, as I said, man, the caller interaction this week has been hot. But if you're going to get in today, it's a good idea to go ahead and call in this first half hour, 205-342-9904, because we're loaded. 9:30, Coach Ellis Johnson breaks down SEC football. At 10 o'clock, D. Orlando Ledbetter with a Falcons report. And I can't wait to talk with Orlando about what's going to happen in Atlanta, man. They're going nowhere fast again. Raheem Morris, you know, you would guess that the Falcons might be making a coaching change again. And we'll talk about some of the guys they interviewed when that job was open. It's a who's who list of guys who've gone on and had success in the NFL as coaches. The Falcons passed on all of them. And Raheem Morris is struggling as the head coach of the Falcons. Then at 10:15, excited to, we told you yesterday, we're going to be talking Alabama, Eastern Illinois from the Eastern Illinois perspective. And excited for this because we've got not only the head coach Chris Wilkerson joining us, but Jawan Nixon, who is their leading tackler. He is their leading tackler for loss, and he is a terrific football player. After 2 years at Riverside City College, where he was an All-American out in California, he signed with Eastern Illinois. He is from Hillcrest High School, was a terrific player at Hillcrest High School. I remember covering him in high school. Man, just an intense football player, physical specimen, and a guy that is a tackling machine. And so it's been really neat. That's what really triggered me to want to get these guys on, because I remember Jawan, and I was like, man, you know, what are the odds that somebody from Hillcrest High School would be playing at Eastern Illinois, and then Eastern Illinois would be coming to Tuscaloosa to play Alabama? So it's a really neat opportunity. We're going to have both of those guys on at 10:15. Also at 10:30, my pal Jeff Spiegel, sports anchor at ABC 3340. So as I said, we're busy on guests, but we're wide open for phone calls in the first half hour. Before we start taking calls, and they're already lining up, obviously the big story last night was Alabama men's basketball. Alabama women, by the way, too, blew out Samford after only being up, I think, 5 at the half, went on and won that game comfortably to move to 5-0. And Ace Austin, the freshman, is really starting to show you what she's all about. She's got special talent. But Alabama men last night, and let me pat myself on the back a little bit, Chase. I do the score predictions on social media. I picked it 92-88, Alabama, and it was 90-86. So not bad, if I say so myself. But Alabama last night did bounce back. Listen, they're 3-1. And they've played in back to, and they got Gonzaga next. They've played back to back to back games against St. John's, Purdue, and Illinois. Three top 10 teams. And they've gone 2-1 of those teams. Interestingly enough, the one that they didn't win was at home against Purdue, which, you know, is number one or number two in the country, depending on, you know, the poll. But for Alabama last night in Chicago, it was not in Champaign, but listen, it was an Illinois home game at the United Center there. For them to win that game in that environment, because I was, you know, watching on TV the best I could at the TV station, then, you know, got home to see the end of it. For them to win that game after really, I thought, in the first half not playing that well and only be down one. And then in the second half, you know, they won by four, but they took control in that second half. And listen, you wonder, Keaton Bristow, if he was back for, if he'd been available for Purdue, did they win that game? Because they got killed on the backboard. In 19 minutes, he had 10 points and 8 rebounds, a steal and a block, 4-7 from the field. I mean, this guy's legit. 6'10, Tarleton State transfer. Amari Allen stepped up. Taylor Bowen continues to play well. And LeBaron Filon is, you know, he's an All-American. 24 points, 9 of 18, field goal shooting, 3 of 6 from 3, 2 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 steal. He can do it all. And in terms of the rebounding, as we've talked about before, I don't think this team is ever going to be a team that's going to be dominant on the glass. But you know what? They only got out-rebounded 40-38 and 14-10 on the offensive end. So if they can hang in against a big physical team like that and be, you know, almost even in rebounds, they're going to be hard to beat. And this is an Alabama team that can score from a lot of different places. Now, Purdue, listen, Purdue's really, really good. And what they were able to do to Alabama on the glass, there'll be some other teams that Alabama plays. But I think, again, if they can and they were even in free throws. They got to the free throw line 23 times, went 17 of 23. Illinois got there 22 times, went just 13 of 22. So they made up for a lot of areas which they had struggled in, and they had less turnovers. Again, Rick Pitino says you got to turn Alabama over. They had 10 turnovers. Illinois had 11. So big, big win. All right, let's go ahead and start taking our phone calls. They're lining up for us. We're going to lead off with Cam. We got Tom. We got Robbie. Hey, Cam, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Hey, Gary, I'm living the dream up here in North Georgia. It's nice weather. It's a little overcast and foggy. It's great. Hey, man, you know, I don't really pay much attention outside of Alabama with my education. Why is it just Lane? Why is it I'm hearing Kirby or that guy that colors his beard in Ohio State as coaching desires for certain colleges? Why is it just Lane, really?
Well, I think that Ryan Day at Ohio State and Kirby Smart at Georgia, I think most people feel like they're just entrenched there, and
so they can't be bought out of their situation because there's no reason for Ohio to leave because he's top of the hill.
And you're talking about arguably the two best programs in the country right now with two established coaches that are making major money. Lane is just seen as more available, and that's, listen, he's doing a great job at Ole Miss, but you know, when you're in terms of perception, Ole Miss, you know, you don't think Ohio State, Georgia, and Ole Miss together. I mean, you still think of Ole Miss as being a notch below. So he's seen as more available. But now, listen, we don't know what goes behind closed doors. Yeah. I mean, you know, somebody have kicked the tires on Kirby at some point? Probably. There's probably been a school or two that checked in just to see, you know, with Jimmy Sexton, what his status is. Yeah. And maybe even the same thing with Ryan Day. But, you know, you'd have to think about it. For them to leave, what could be better? Maybe if you wanted to test your skills in the NFL, maybe you
start over,
possibly, but it'd have to be a ton of money. I know everybody says, me included, how much money do you need and how much money that, you know, have, you know, made already, but still none of these college guys are going to take less money to go somewhere else. They're just not.
Well, what I'm thinking, I mean, it's a good thing for us because the last thing I would want would be the board to be having to deal if he might be, I don't know, but he's being able to focus on us and not having to fend off LSU or all these other colleges. But then that shows also that no one really wants DeBoer because they're not making him an offer, so they don't think he is a Lane or a Kirby. So is it kind of a double-edged sword, or am I just reading too much into it?
Well,
does anybody want him?
Listen, there might be some interest in DeBoer. I mean, there's some rumors and buzz out there about Penn State. I mean, he's done a good job here. But I mean, and again, we don't know everything, Cam. I mean, yeah. These agents and these ADs and search firms, they work sometimes, you know, they're stealth sometimes. So you don't know who's being talked to. So, but I don't want him focused on anything else right now. All he needs to be focused on
You know, I don't want anybody to take him, but no one taking him is kind of like, huh.
Well,
but,
I mean, it's better for us. I think there is some interest from Penn State. I think there's some interest there. So, from what
let me get off. The wife said, Jam just ran up the middle for no gain. So, third Nate. Have a good day, Gary.
All right. Thank you, Cam. That's a good one to go. Let's go ahead and I tell you what. Let's go ahead and take a break. Well, let's go ahead and take Tom because he's been on hold for a while. Robbie, you hold top. We'll get to you on the other side. What's up, Sheriff?
Hey, buddy. What's going on this morning? How are you?
Good.
I like your analogy on the basketball game last night. I was thrilled to get that win, but Michael Southern has done a free kind of an early scouting report on Gonzaga. He says that's going to be a matchup nightmare.
Boy, he can't even. Michael can't even let us enjoy the Illinois game for 12 hours, can he? My Lord.
He is on the ball. Don't be questioning Michael Sutton.
Well, I mean, I'm not focused on Gonzaga at this moment. I'm still basking in the glory of going into Chicago, Michael Jordan's home arena, and beating Illinois.
That's not on Michael. That's on me for bringing it up. But, anyway, we'll see, you know, on Monday night. But Coach Jack Crow was on this morning, and he said something that I brought up to you, and you kind of disagreed with me on it. That it was we just had a good conversation. It wasn't really one of our heated disagreements. But he said that when you hadn't got a running game, you got to run the guy that ain't accounted for. And that's the quarterback, which I agree with. It. I said 3 weeks ago, Ty needs to run the ball more. Or the offense needs the quarterback to run the ball more. I don't care who it is. But I think that's where we might just hedge our bet a little bit on offense with the quarterback run more often.
Well, listen, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I think you're right. I mean, we saw what Milroe was able to do in the run game last year. And when you can run the quarterback, a lot of things open up. I remember the conversation is that that's not what they want in their offense. They don't want the quarterback running other than maybe occasionally. And, you know, that's just, again, I think we're starting to see, and we may see it more as we go forward, but this offense is quarterback-centric. But they are a pass-first offense. That's what they do. And they want a quarterback to follow the game with his arm, and they don't want the quarterback running, 15 times a game. But I'm with you. I wish he would run more on his own. I think that, and I know you're,
that's
what you're saying.
What I'm talking about.
When the field opens up in front of you and you got 10 yards of green, you got what they're saying, man, if you got green grass in front of you, take it. I mean, and take those free yards. So, but he has been more hesitant to run as we've gone through the season. So, I don't know.
Right. I wonder if he's got Ace and Payne.
Well, I think that he's probably pretty banged up. I think the course of the season, hearing some stuff that he's having to battle through. But listen, that's football, and we know this.
Right.
If you're healthy enough to go out there and play, then you got to be able to play the position the best, and all. But again, that's this offense. Again, and I'm not being critical. I'm just saying, as we got into this year, I went back and researched what they did at Washington. I went back and looked at what they did at Fresno State, and that's the way they play. I mean, they put a lot on the quarterback. They consider some of the passes that they consider that they run. They consider almost like run plays. I mean, and some of the stuff that they do with the gadgets. So, but as far as just lining up and banging it in there with a couple tight ends and that's just not who they are. So,
I agree. But I wanted to say this: your point about running to the green grass. That's what I'm talking about as well. I mean, and you ain't got to do it, but not every time. You ain't got to do it, but once or twice a game, you get them to thinking about you running. See, you got a whole different set of equations to have to work on.
You're right. You're right. Well, I tell you this, when they get through this game this weekend and they get, you know, down to Jordan-Hare a week from Saturday, they need to do whatever they need to do to win the game. And I don't care what there that you is. Go. You know, as I said, Tom, and I'm going to say this again before we hit the break, I don't know what's going to happen. The craziest this thing gets now with this playoff committee and some of the stuff, weird stuff that I heard the other night. But I know this. If Kalen DeBoer wins that Iron Bowl and Alabama's 10-2 and whatever happens after that, he'll be fine. You know what?
I hope you're right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he'll be fine. I mean, you know, fans will view him fondly even if you don't, you know, something happens, you don't win the SEC championship game or you don't get in the playoff or this. But if you win that game down at Auburn, he'll be in good shape.
I see what you're saying now.
Don't worry about
it. I agree with you on that.
Don't worry about anything else.
Check this out.
Yeah.
This is the biggest game that he'll ever coach, and he better win it.
I wouldn't disagree with you. I wouldn't disagree with you at all. Hey, thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
All right, let's get to the break here. 9:21. We are off and running. We've got Coach Ellis Johnson coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll get back to phone calls on the other side. Big win for Alabama women's basketball at home against Samford. Ace Austin is really going to be a star. And I got other good players, too. They're 5-0. Bama men, huge win. Gonzaga and, you know, coming up on Monday night and the scheduled, and then, you know, then UNLV, Clemson. I mean, listen, they still got Arizona. That's all before Yale. Yale's pretty good. That's all before they get into the SEC. How about that? All right, we'll come back and take more phone calls here on the Thursday edition of the Gary Harris Show on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC, your home for Alabama sports.
What's trending on the Tuscaloosa Thread.
Good Thursday morning. Gas prices are steady across Alabama as we got ready to move into Thanksgiving week. The state average is $2.73 a gallon, same as last week. Here in West Alabama, every county except Greene is below $3 a gallon, and it's $3.01 there. It averages $2.71 a gallon in Tuscaloosa County. Click TuscaloosaThread.com all throughout the day. It's absolutely free with West Alabama news, sports, and weather updates. Don Hartley, Tuscaloosa Media, Tuscaloosa.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and Three special Monday through.
Not available in every state. Only applicable for new auto insurance business. Rates will vary by several factors, including how you purchase the policy. Potential savings vary. Allstate North American Insurance Company and Affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
Since 2011, Billy Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big screen, high-definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and outside on the beautiful patio. Come by and say hello to Kim and Lisa, the Billy's management dream team. Billy's, good food, good friends, and good time.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The weather stays unseasonably warm today, a mix of sun and clouds with a high of 79. For tonight, becoming cloudy, the low 61. Tomorrow, cloudy with periods of rain, the high 74. Saturday, the chance of a morning shower, the high 76. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 62 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
Yeah. But we got just a few minutes, so we gotta get to the show to get before we get to the break. Hey, also want to remind you, and I know our next caller knows all about this place, Rock and Roll Sushi, downtown on University Boulevard in Tuscaloosa. Open 7 days a week, beginning at 11 a.m. Open to 9 on weekdays, 10 on the weekends, and those lunch specials are unbelievable. That Hibachi Grill, Chase, you can get one of those bowls for lunch special, because I know I had it, and they'll mix everything in there with you. Your chicken, your shrimp, your steak, your rice, your veggies, you know, get a California roll, something to go with it, and you got a very healthy. I think it's pretty healthy. It's certainly tasty lunch for a good price. I mean, you can't beat it. Rock and Roll Sushi on University Boulevard, 22229 University Boulevard in Tuscaloosa. All right, let's get out on the phone lines and talk to Robbie Glenn. Hey, Robbie Glenn, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Gary. Happy Thursday. And you're right, Rock and Roll Sushi, one of the best. Absolutely love the people and the food.
It
Every
rocks.
Location I go to. Is
rock
one
and
of the
roll
best.
Sushi rocks.
It does. It rocks. So that's one of my go-tos. But, yeah, great game last night. You know, Bama's in this gauntlet. They think the schedule is outrageous right now playing, but that's what you want to see. And our guys are getting after it. You know our MO is going to be we're going to shoot the three and we're going to outrun you. And we did that because you saw Illinois start getting tired. And as good as they were, and they were scrapped, they were hanging in there. But you could tell they got tired with the pace they were playing. And I thought the referees kind of helped them out there in the second half with calling the little petty fouls to slow it down a little bit. But, you know, they were calling it both ways. But it was like they let them play in the first half, and then the second half started calling everything. And that came back to bite Bama getting in foul trouble the way they did. But positive of that is you saw 11 guys get a lot of minutes, and that's good building the depth when we're getting down towards the
end. Let me ask you this, since you watched it all, and obviously I didn't get to watch it all because I'm trying to work around it and, you know, and keep up with it. But do you think that Bristow, the way he played last night, and really still kind of limited minutes, do you think if Alabama had had Bristow against Purdue that they would have won that game, Robbie?
I think he would have definitely helped big time because the energy he brought in, and I was shocked he played so many minutes last night on his first game back.
Yeah, well, he played 19. He just maximized what he, you know, when he was in there to go for 10 and 8, a steal and a block. Man, that's, you know, and they still were tied 80-80 with Purdue. You know, you throw him in that game for, you know, 19 minutes and maybe they win it. I mean, I thought he was really good last night.
Well, I do too. I thought the energy and the way he crashed the board, but everybody, I think that's their emphasis that they put on this game is what happened against Purdue is they got out-rebounded and they crashed the boards last night from opening tip to get, they were getting after it. Still need to box that a little better, but everybody was crashing and he was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, Sherrell got in foul trouble
so
early.
Yeah, 9 minutes. Yeah. 9 minutes from Sherrell. Yeah. I mean, so, yeah.
Good They've got to clean that up a little bit. You know, fouls are going to happen, but the unnecessary fouls and the turnovers that they had, you know, just, you know, one-on-one dribbling and getting it stripped or tripping, you know, stuff like that. But they'll clean that up. But that was a big step forward is crashing the boards. And that was good to see. And now, you know, get a little rest before Gonzaga and Vegas. And, you know, that's going to be another nightmare matchup because those guys are going to run too. So
yeah.
I like the way Bama's playing and the way they're heading. So just keep improving every game. And they're going to be reckoning. Like, they're going to be in the tournament and make a good run. And I like the team.
Thanks, Robbie.
Thank you, Gary.
All right, buddy. 9:30. We're going to come back with Coach Ellis Johnson to break it all down. SEC football last weekend and the weekend coming up. We'll do it with Coach, and it's always a lot of fun. All right, let's keep it dialed in here to Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC, and we'll be right back.
You and thank you, because without the donors, St. Jude wouldn't be here.
Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Your home for Alabama Crimson Tide football. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
It's 9:33, and it's time for the coach joining us from his home up there in South Carolina and to the sounds of the Marshall Tucker Band. Coach Ellis Johnson's here to break it all down. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning, Gary.
Well, listen, I'm not going to – I've talked about these stats all week long, so the short version is Alabama 406 total yards to 212, nearly doubled them up, time of possession, first downs. I mean, all the statistics as a whole favored Alabama, but three turnovers, got beat badly in special teams. Oklahoma had a smart plan again on defense. Alabama came in plus 10 in turnover differential. The Sooners were minus 5, but it's obvious Brent Venables knows how to attack this Alabama offense 2 years in a row. And he said after the game, he said, you know, somebody said, well, this, and he said, well, if this hadn't happened and that hadn't happened, you'd say that. But he said, we made it happen. We forced those turnovers. And they did. Second straight year with a pick six. Oklahoma comes into Tuscaloosa, wins the game 23-21. And Alabama, again, offensively did some good things, but you know it and I know it, and you coached at this level. You can't have that many miscues, including the turnovers, and expect to win the football game. And the fact that Alabama had a chance with Oklahoma's longest drive of the game being 41 yards, I thought was fairly remarkable. But in the end, it was just too much to overcome. What'd you see?
Yep. I mean, you covered it pretty much in your analysis, and you ask why. And I think you have to go back. They do not have a dependable running game.
That's right.
And
just don't.
You have to keep throwing it and throwing it and throwing it against a team like Oklahoma. You're going to end up in trouble with a few plays. And the few plays they did get in trouble, Oklahoma made them, they were backbreakers. Pick six, three turnovers in total. It's hard to overcome that when you don't get any on the other side. And their defense, Alabama's defense played well, but they didn't get any takeaways. It didn't create the kind of field position that they maybe needed. So I just think it goes back to the fact, Gary, it's been weeks we've been mentioning the running game not being very effective. And against a good defensive team, it eventually puts too much pressure in the passing game.
All right. I got to ask you something, and because I don't know. Again, and that's one thing, you know, I don't claim to come on here and break down film and do analysis. I'm not a coach. The next game I coach will be my first, but you are. But I do have an observation, and particularly the way this season's gone, I went back and I researched a little bit at Washington, and I researched a little bit at Fresno State, and I researched how they've played on offense. And I know everybody has said, well, they had 1,100-yard rusher, the kid from Mississippi State, a couple years ago at Washington, but that was in 15 games. I don't know that they want to run the ball, Coach, and this is why I'm asking you, because I'm getting into territory that I don't understand. And this is a quarterback-centric offense, in my opinion. They put it all on the quarterback. They consider some of these things they do with the short passes and certainly the gadget plays to be run plays. But the idea of lining up and running the ball downhill, that's just not who they are. So, I mean, I keep hearing, well, they can't run the ball. I'm not sure that – I mean, I'm not saying they don't want to have success when they do run it, but I just – after researching this offensive staff, I just don't feel like that's who they are. They want to control everything through the quarterback and run a little bit to complement the passing game. What's your take, your response to that take that I've got?
I think that's an excellent analysis. And what happens to teams, if that is so, what you'll find is on the practice field, the percentage of time going into pass protections and schemes and routes and all that type of thing, it doesn't need much time to develop the running game. So you try to build it on the back of a talented running back and a good-looking offensive line. And if you're not doing it every day in practice, it's not going to get better. There are some other teams. Clemson's gotten into that. And I don't think, it doesn't seem that it's in the coordinator's DNA to have a really physical running game. Now, they've changed the last 3 or 4 weeks, and I've seen more pulls with guards and what everybody calls the gap plays as opposed to the zone plays. What's happened to a lot of teams, not necessarily Alabama, but what's happened to a lot of teams these days is the RPO is sort of a soup du jour, if you will, and that requires more zone blocking for the most part. And you can get caught up in it to a point that you think it's a great system and your running game is getting softer and softer and softer.
I want to ask you about Ty, because I was there. And again, 28 of 42 for 326 yards and a touchdown. That sounds pretty good. But he had the pick six, which was a, you know, potentially a 14-point swing. Alabama was, you know, at the 20-something yard line of Oklahoma. And he had another sack fumble. 5 straight games. But the thing I saw in that game, I thought he, for the first time, appeared to be a little bit rattled. Then after the game, we interviewed him in the post, and DeBoer said the same thing, said, you know, about the fumble. He said, hey, you know what? We got to get rid of the football. We got to throw it away. Got to, you know, got to learn, live to play another day. And then Ty said the same thing. And I guess my response was to, you know, thinking, how many reminders do you need? This is five straight games that you fumble the football. And, you know, in the National Football League, they love to say you're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. I mean, at some point, the word salad doesn't add up. If you know you need to do it, then you got to start doing it, because you can't keep giving the other team the football every week, Coach.
Well, I totally agree with what you're saying, and I don't mean to take it off of him again, but the kid has no running game. He has no friend out there on the field when he's out there. And he sees his football team falling behind, and you're moving the ball up and down the field, and he just wants to make a play, I guess.
Right.
But, you know, you've got to have a feel for when you're in trouble as a quarterback, and you've got to protect the ball. And it's too much, you know, extending plays and more athletic quarterbacks that hurt people up by scrambling and throwing it downfield on a scramble route, all by running the football, getting into these secondaries, playing a lot of man coverage. That's become something that's very dangerous, you know, and hard to defend as a defensive coach. He's not that good. He's very nifty. He has a good feel for the pocket. He moves around well. He can get out of trouble when he has to sometimes. He's not a runner. And as a result, he's getting hit, and the ball's not protected as well. And I just think that it's too much on him, frankly. And we've seen him have some drives. I mean, he's 12 and 13 and 15-play drives, and he looks like a magician. But if there's no running game against a good defensive team, all that pressure comes back on the quarterback. And it gets harder not to make a mistake.
Yeah, that's good analysis, and that can kind of lead me into my next question. And obviously next week we'll break the Iron Bowl down in depth. But Alabama does play Eastern Illinois this weekend. You know, they're going to win that game. I'm sure they've been working on Auburn some this week. But and you're right about Ty. I mean, he's had a fantastic season, and they do put a lot on him again, because that's what they do. They put a lot on the quarterback. But Auburn's got a good defense. DJ Durkin's a good defensive coordinator. They've had good plans. They saw what Oklahoma did. And they're going to come after Ty as well. Again, next week we'll get into serious analysis. But you can't reinvent yourself this deep in the season. But what can they do for the Iron Bowl from an offensive standpoint to take some of that pressure off of him this late in the, I mean, you can tinker a little bit, can't you? I don't think you're going to run the ball for 200 yards, but you've got to do something, as you say, in that game to take some pressure off the quarterback.
Yeah, they're a little bit different style than Oklahoma. They've done a good job of pressuring quarterbacks and so forth, but they don't blitz as much as Oklahoma does.
Right.
But they have been really good against the run, and that's not a good matchup for Alabama. This game, you know, it's going to be a big spread by the bookies and all that good stuff, but when they go into Jordan-Hare, you can almost toss a coin. And it's going to be a tough matchup for Alabama on strengths versus weaknesses and vice versa. So what can they do schematically with the running game? I don't know. Not in five or six practices. But if they have them in the playbook, they need a little bit more gap schemes, pulls, counters, things that can get vertical with the ball instead of all the zone and sidestep and sidestep and push and all that. They've got to get some kind of physicality in that running game if it's going to, you know, be there when you need it.
Last question on Alabama, and I'm going to have the Eastern Illinois head coach on in the next hour, and their star linebacker who's from Hillcrest High School. But reality is reality. I mean, Alabama is going to win that game. You've been in this situation before many times where you're playing that game before your big rival or in-state rival, and what's this week like? I mean, obviously you have to prepare for the team you're playing, but what's the mindset? I guess, is it just really just get through the game and, you know, not get anybody hurt, hopefully play some young players? How do you approach this game when you know what you've got coming up the next week?
Well, it sounds cliche, but believe it or not, coaches don't approach them any different.
Okay.
Because you send the wrong message to your players if you do. So, although it's in the back of their mind, I can guarantee you that Egg Bowl, even the Iron Bowl, but they're not going to bring that up this week. They're not going to say, all right, guys, this period we're working on Auburn plays. There may be some Auburn plays in that practice script, but you don't tell the player. And you don't talk about it. You don't even mention it anywhere around that building. Because you're asking players to lose their focus on the opponent. And they will out-athlete Eastern Illinois. They'll get some guys in space that Eastern Illinois can't cover. Does that make them better for Auburn? I don't know. Because it goes back again. I hate to beat the rock over and over and over, but they're going to have to run the football somewhat effectively against Auburn to help the whole football team have a shot to win the game.
All right, let's get to some other teams. And listen, you got South Carolina, Clemson coming up in a week, and boy, both those programs, they've had tough seasons. Both the head coaches are a little bit under fire, but what we saw this past Saturday in College Station, that's a great thing about college football, Coach. We talk about it's real reality TV, and you see things you've never seen. I mean, South Carolina was up 30-3 in that ball game at halftime. And if they, handled the clock better there at the end, they might have been up 34-3. But they're up 30-3 against the number three team in the country on the road. And I don't think there was anybody that felt like this was a guarantee they'd win the game. But still, if they can score anything in the second half to lose that game, I don't care how good the other team is. I don't care what the circumstances are. To blow a 30-3 lead, what in the world? Goodness gracious.
It's hard to explain. And I've already done two South Carolina area shows. One was a podcast, one was a radio. Questions come up. You don't really have an answer for them. What's been so sad for Carolina, Gary, they've had like, not to this extent, but they've had like five games like this.
Alabama, another one.
Led going into the fourth quarter. And then, of course, Alabama and Texas A&M arguably in the top three or four in the conference. And they had them beat.
That's right.
I mean, they had.
Sure did.
It was almost a hopeless situation, but they somehow closed it out. Different reason. It was like two halves. The biggest thing I saw change, and I don't know why, but Texas A&M's offensive line has just been devastating to anybody they play. They manhandled Florida's defensive front several weeks ago, and it just made you realize how good they are in that area. The first half against South Carolina, they could not run the football. They didn't do that the whole game. They could not run the football. They got disruption in the backfield, had two big turnovers, had a sack fumble touchdown return by a big defensive tackle. They got stuffed in the goal line one time. It was just amazing. They had four takeaways by the defense in total, but they gave up too many explosive plays in the second half, and it got out of control. But their offense didn't come back and help them either. They just kind of went dead somehow. And so it's a hard game to explain, but it's not the only one they've had like that this year.
What do you think? We're speculating, but that's what we do on this side of when you're coaching, you can't speculate, but we can. Shane Beamer, will he be back at South Carolina next year?
Oh, I think so. I don't know anything. I know a lot of people who do know things. And I've not heard anybody say anything to that nature. Now, there have been coaching changes made during the season on the staff. And when you do that, it has to be better change or you're next. But I don't think it's coming this soon.
Okay. All right. Texas and Georgia. And, I mean, we've seen this movie with Georgia, buddy. They're going to get better as the season goes along. And, Alabama beat them there. And they had a couple chances. A couple other teams had chances to beat them. But somebody called me last week and said, who are you picking in Georgia, Texas? I said, well, I'm picking Georgia. Why wouldn't I? until I see otherwise. They beat them twice last year out there and in Atlanta. I said, I don't see this script playing any different. In the fourth quarter, they just dominated the game and beat them 35-10. And again, I'm not surprised. I know you're not surprised. But what did you see from Georgia, and particularly now in this era of we're talking about, and listen, they throw it. I mean, their quarterback can throw the ball too, but boy, the physicality that they play with, I think it's different than most teams. And you see it toward the end of the season, how they start taking control of games.
Yep. You kind of take things right out of my mouth here every time we talk. But I picked Georgia too. I didn't think it'd be this dominant. But Georgia gets better and better and better. And if you look at all the other teams, including, like what happened to Texas A&M last week, what happened to Texas now twice? What happened to Alabama last week? Georgia seems to be able to handle those situations when they get put in that tough situation. Like Ole Miss couldn't close it out. They beat Ole Miss on a tough situation. They get mentally tougher and physically tougher as the season goes on. And some of the other teams don't seem to have that progress. They seem to still have that bad day somewhere in their schedule. You know, penalties, turnovers. They had the quarterback a little bit off base. And I just think, you know, the defense kind of had them off balance the whole day. Texas 15 first downs, 23 yards rushing. And I can't get the Texas game against Kentucky out of my mind 2-3 weeks ago. I mean, it was just, I don't know how they got out of there with a win, because their offense was just, it might as well not come out there. And I don't understand those things. It's just hard to explain them. Georgia, on the other hand, you mentioned the quarterback. Same thing. You're on top of everything I'm just getting ready to say. But lately, he's been making more vertical passes downfield, and it's been effective. So he's not just throwing little screens and the slants and the RPOs. He's starting to get some good vertical throws down the field now, and it's making them hard to handle because they're a physical team. They'll run the football. They got a good varied passing game. And I've heard a lot of criticism. Mike Bobo, he's one of the best I've ever had to coach against.
I agree with you.
As long as the quarterback keeps playing the way he's playing, he's a winner. He's tough. He's focused. He's a leader. And he's contagious for the rest of that football team. And like I said, he's started to get better now throwing the ball downfield, and that's going to make Georgia hard to handle as this thing closes out.
Yeah, the Mike Bobo deal is just another example of fans. Once they get it in their head, I mean, what can you do? I mean, all they do is win. All right, we're getting up against the clock a little bit with Coach Ellis Johnson. So let's touch on Ole Miss. Again, we don't have as many big games coming up this week anyway because of the week before the rivalry games. There are a couple that we'll touch on. But they beat Florida last week, 34-24. But listen, man, it is a soap opera. There's no other way around it. And I, you know, it doesn't bother him. He all this stuff can be swirling around him. I think, if anything, he feeds off of it. But you know, I mean, Ole Miss has had an extension on his desk for a month. You know, he's got his family reportedly, and, you know, there's video of it down in Baton Rouge, you know, getting a tour of the city. Florida's got an offer out there. He can handle it. But I don't you have to have some sensitivity to your fan base? Ole Miss, let's just tell it like it is. They've kissed his rear end over there for 6 years. I mean, they've literally given him everything he's asked for. And this just seems to me, I just wish he would handle it better. You know, your take on, they got a good football team, they're in contention for the college football playoff, and yet all this stuff is just flying around. And again, just because it doesn't bother him doesn't mean it doesn't bother other people.
Well, I think the thing you got to worry about is it bothers the players.
That's right.
And in this day of portal, you know, who knows? He may have told them, hey, don't worry about it. I'm here. And if I do leave, we'll all still be together because I'm taking, you know, who knows? But they don't seem to be distracted. I know he doesn't seem to be, but the players don't seem to be
distracted. They don't. I agree with that, yeah.
You know, they haven't played perfect all game, every game, but they played dang well. And Florida, I would have thought this was a trap game for Ole Miss, and they usually have one in the last 4 or 5 weeks that they screw up. But what I saw happen with Florida the week before, it looks like their players just kind of lost their stinger. And so I didn't expect anything to happen in this game. And of course, it didn't. The Ole Miss's defense is playing a little bit better each week. And I don't know, it just the other stuff you're talking about, some of it's just the situation with the way college football is so screwed up right now. And even Lane can't do anything about it. But I do think he's creating some of it. And whether he wants to feed off of it or not, he's creating about half of it. So we'll see. If they don't get distracted, I have no confidence in State's defense in the Egg Bowl. I just don't think they should be able to stop people. So I don't see an upset in Starkville.
All right, real quickly.
They're going to finish 11. They're going to finish 11-1. They're going to either be in the championship game and or the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, real quickly, some of these games this weekend. Oklahoma coming off that huge win. Mizzou's a quality team. It's in Norman. But these are the kind of games that sometimes we see teams that next week struggle with. You give Missouri a shot here to go in there and pull off an upset?
They're dangerous, but, they don't have the quarterback.
That's right.
I don't think he's bad.
No, I don't think he's
bad. They're kind of a one-handed painter. And I just don't see that against Oklahoma's defense. On the other hand, Missouri's played pretty good defense this year. So Oklahoma needs to get a little bit better and more consistent on offense, because right now they're just living off turnovers and defensive scores. So it's a dangerous game, but I think Oklahoma will beat them at home.
Give Mark Stoops credit. Kentucky was going nowhere fast, man, and they've rattled off three in a row. They're 5-5. They can get bowl eligible. They go into Nashville. Vandy's looking big picture, too. I mean, we've kind of lost track of Vanderbilt, but if they went out, you know, they're going to be 10-2. But I got a feeling Kentucky is, you know, going to go in there and play them tough. How do you see that matchup?
I totally agree with you. They've got this game, then they've got Louisville. And that's two teams that they're not playing as well as this year. But if they can beat them, they're going to a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
If they can beat either one of them, to a bowl. And so these are two tough games for them to finish. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Duke pulls off one off the four boats. I think Vanderbilt will beat them in Nashville. But I'm not so sure Kentucky won't get them a win that last game and get 6 wins.
Texas hosts Arkansas in Austin, and normally we just write this one off, but even though Arkansas is 2-8 and 0-6 in the SEC, that's another team they could have won some games. Texas, you know, has got 3 losses, probably fortunate they don't have 4 or 5 losses. I mean, it's a rivalry game. Petrino, I'm talking to some people that I know up there in Arkansas, they're saying he's still a candidate for this job, even though he hadn't won a game since he took over as the interim. Texas, let's be honest, I mean, there's still some people trying to make a case for them for the playoff. I don't see it. I wonder if at some point, because of the expectations, that maybe they don't give a maximum effort, and if this game could turn out to be closer than most people expect.
Well, Arkansas has been putting up points, and, of course, Texas has played good defense. The offense has been where the problems are, and Arkansas can't stop anybody. Arkansas and Mississippi State defenses this year are just consistently bad. And they haven't even had a game where they stepped up and were a key factor. So I think they'll score their points probably, but they're turning the ball over too much and they get a lot of points. So I wouldn't begin to think they were going to beat Texas, but not like you said, nothing was surprising now. I don't think Texas is a playoff team either. They're going to have a lot of help from some other teams getting knocked off before they're going to be back in the middle of it.
And lastly, in 30 seconds, Coach, it's been a long year for the Gators, but they get Tennessee in Gainesville. And, you know, what we talk about with rivalry games, it could, you know, put a smile on the Florida fans' faces. You think they got any shot against Tennessee?
I wouldn't favor them. I think Tennessee would probably beat them. But they just the last 2 weeks, since all the change, they haven't looked like they've been playing extremely inspired. They look like they're distracted. They look like a bunch of kids who are probably getting tampered with right now and you know, other schools trying to get them to leave. I just can't see the focus that they have right now. They've been beaten pretty bad 2 weeks in a row.
Coach, thank you. It's a great segment as always, and appreciate it. Well, next week we'll have rivalry week, so we'll be ready for that.
Sounds great, Gary.
All right, and that's going to wrap it up for hour number one. And we're going to go ahead and close out the hour. And when we come back on the other side for hour number two, we'll be talking with D. Orlando Ledbetter from the Falcons. Of course, obviously, we've got the Eastern Illinois contingent coming up and Jeff Spiegel as well. So a jam-packed second hour is on the way. This hour has been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Thank you for listening. We'll have hour number two coming up.
The Tide Postgame Show is powered by Pearl River Resort, DCH Regional Medical Center, Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, and Two Dimes.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Martin Weiss.
In the NBA, Houston improves to 10-3, beating Cleveland 114-104. Alperen Şengün led the Rockets with 28 points, 11 rebounds, and 7 assists. The Warriors fall to the Heat 110-96. Golden State resting Draymond Green and Steph Curry. The Nuggets beat the Pelicans 125-118. Nikola Jokic with a 28-point, 11 rebound, and 12 assists triple-double. Derek Queen had 30 points and 9 rebounds. Pelicans, 2 wins on the year. Opposite of that, Thunder improved to 15-1, remaining undefeated at home. They beat the Kings 113-99. Reigning MVP Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 33 points. 6 players, including quarterback Baker Mayfield and wide receiver Emeka Ibuka, were limited at a Buccaneers walkthrough practice on Wednesday due to illness.
By Tuscaloosa Tractor, Castaway Fish Co., Crimson Fried Hunting and Fishing, Precision Armory, Jumpshin Grocery, Urbans, Military Surplus, R Us, and Adams Heating and Cooling.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for The Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two of the Gary Harris Show with Gary Harris, Chase Brumfield, and we're going to kick it off with D. Orlando Ledbetter, one of the finest pro football beat writers in the country, covers the Atlanta Falcons for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, AJC.com, and joins us weekly for the Falcons Report. Hey, good morning, Orlando. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Gary. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, and let's just dive right in because the Falcons, once again, are a mess. After a 3-2 start, they've dropped five games in a row. Several of those games, particularly the last three, I mean, coulda, wouldas, and shouldas everywhere, but you are what your record says you are. And right now, you know, they're not good. And we'll get to Penix in a moment, but let's start with Carolina, a team that had beat your brains in up there in Charlotte 30-0 in week three. You get them at home, you need a win, and you can't get it done. Bryce Young absolutely torched the defense. He had a career day, set the Panthers' single-game passing yards record, three touchdowns, no picks, and the Falcons lose in overtime 30-27. You were there. What'd you see?
Yeah, no doubt, Gary. They raced out to a 21-7 lead and then, you know, took their foot off the pedal or couldn't finish. Allowed the Panthers to creep back in and steal that thing in overtime. You know, it's like, how did the offense go from, you know, three consecutive touchdown drives, a 95-yarder, to nothing? And that's what happened there on Sunday. They were able to get another late lead, though. They still did that. Then the defense couldn't hold, and they had to settle for fourth in overtime. So, you know, that's just signs to me of the team maybe being overrated or not being as good as we thought they were. Certainly, you know, there were some injuries and stuff along the way. But, yeah, that was a team that couldn't close out, you know, and that's what happened against the Panthers. Bryce got hot and took advantage of a depleted secondary and had, you know, one of his biggest days in the National Football League.
Yeah, he did. And as we said, now the Falcons are reeling with five straight losses. They're 3-7 overall. Michael Penix is out, going to have knee surgery. Kirk Cousins back in. Let's get to some big picture stuff. And I gotta ask about Penix because, listen, he's had a history of knee injuries. And you draft this guy, he was already a little bit older than the average rookie quarterback. I mean, there'd be some people that say, you could have, you know, if you'd have tracked his medical history, you'd have been a little bit shy on this guy. Now he's hurt. And, you know, your feelings on they're going to be without him, it looks like, the rest of the season. And, you know, you wonder long term if he can hold up in the National Football League with his history of injuries.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, that was an issue on draft day. That was the issue before the draft. And it was the issue now. You know, it's the other knee. He had two surgeries on the right knee, left shoulder, right shoulder. This is his fifth career season-ending injury wow. in the last since 2018, seven wow. seasons. So, yeah, you kind of got to double down and brace yourself for the future. If he makes it back, fine. If not, even if he makes it back, he's still 27. So, yeah, you're jumping back in the quarterback market. Just at what point at, you know, if it's at the top of the market, well, you can't jump back at the top because you traded first round pick. So it's got to be at the backup, and your backup is 30, it'll be 38 next year. So you got to get a quality backup at the very minimum, somebody that can get you through a couple games while he works back through his knee injury.
You know, you mentioned the Falcons went all in this season. They moved up to, you know, get a defensive lineman. They trade away their pick, which right now is a top 10 pick. Quarterback's out. Season's going downhill. I have to ask the obvious question, and we'll get into some of the other candidates that the Falcons interviewed and could have hired. What's Raheem's Morris's future, do you think? Fontenot's future? Are the Falcons at the end of the season looking at another complete rebuild? And at what point does McKay finally take, you know, what, I mean, I don't understand really how Arthur Blank goes about running his organization. It's a little bit like Jerry Jones, except I do think Jerry Jones has more football IQ and acumen than Arthur Blank. I mean, this was supposed to be the year for the Falcons. Now it's, you know, it's going where it's, you know, where it's headed. And you wonder at the end of the season, did they just blow this thing up? What are you thinking, Orlando?
Yeah, he didn't play in college like Jerry did. Jerry at least played at Arkansas, knew Jimmy Johnson.
Mm-hmm. And, that's right.
Had enough sense to hire him. But, and then blew that up too. But yeah, Mr. Blank is running more like Home Depot, which, you know, he helped build, and he's trying to get all the great minds in the room and collaborate. But they keep coming up with plans that don't work. You know, giving Kirk Cousins $180 million, giving, you know, doubling down on the draft when you need so many other things. You know, everything, some hasn't worked. So at some point when you're not winning and stuff's not working, you got to, you know, about your brain trust. So he's gonna, you know, be facing some very serious issues here at the end of the season. You know, even if they run the table here, that's 10 and 7, that'll probably save everybody. But they haven't shown any signs they can do that.
They haven't shown any signs, so
yeah, it's everything's on the table. And if they get hot and split it, you know, 5-2, something like that, then maybe, you know, they've done enough to convince them that, hey, you know, we need another shot at this with our healthy quarterback. You know, that's the only selling point they have moving forward. Because, I went back looking at the drafts and stuff, too. The last couple drafts been pretty good, but there were a lot of major mistakes there early on in the Fontenot era, too. So it's going to be hard for them to say, hey, you know, we're heading in the right direction and you need to stay the course.
A lot of talk now about Raheem Morris and who the Falcons could have hired. There were coaches wanted that job. I mean, of course, we know about Belichick, but they interviewed Vrabel. They interviewed Harbaugh. They interviewed Ben Johnson. They passed on all these guys. And clearly now it looks like they made a mistake.
Yeah, you know, they could have had Belichick. That would have been a full blow up. And, you know, they didn't want to do it. They thought they had enough stuff going to keep moving forward. So that's what happened there. A lot of these guys didn't want this job. You know, Harbaugh, you know, he wanted, everybody knew he wanted Herbert and the Chargers.
True.
So, you know, that was a functional thing. And then Ben, you know, he cherry picked Chicago. He got Caleb Williams up there. So he's like, yeah, he turned down jobs the year before to cherry pick that one. So, you know, but Ben McDonald was the one I thought, you know, he's from Georgia, learned under Kirby, smart. He's an Atlanta guy. If I would have started out anew with somebody, it would have been him. So that's, you know, you're watching what he's doing with in Seattle and thinking, hey, that might have been the way to go. So, but yeah, a lot of those guys weren't coming here. Vrabel wasn't coming here. He was waiting for the Patriots job. But you got to talk to him. So, you know, they did that.
Okay.
You know, Raheem made sense to me, too, when they made it. But yeah, Ben McDonald would have been a good out-of-the-box pick for them also.
All right, you cleared that up because there's a lot of stuff going on social media about all the candidates that they interviewed. Okay, you mentioned chance for a turnaround. I don't think they can do it, but I know this. If they're going to have a chance, they better win these next two games before they play the Seahawks and the Bucks. They go to New Orleans and they go to the Jets, both road games, but two bad football teams, must wins, right?
Yeah, no doubt. Do you have enough, though? You got enough? Is Kirk Cousins and Bijan enough? You know, Darnell Mooney's been missing in action. You know, can you confuse the young quarterback and get him to throw you a couple? You know, you got to look at trying to score any kind of way you can at these points. You know, could you look down the roster without Drake London? You don't really see any receivers. So, maybe Kyle Pitts comes through for you. So, that's the situation they're in, but they definitely need to win these two just to boost morale. You know, five losses in a row, you know. We haven't seen the infighting yet, but you know, he's keeping locker room together by all accounts so far. But, you know, because they're playing pretty close in these games. They just can't close them. So the bottom hasn't fallen out. We haven't seen them let go of the rope yet. But that could be coming.
Well, we'll see what happens. Back to Kirk Cousins. He's one of the best in the business, folks. Follow him on Twitter at DOrlandoAJC. Go to AJC.com. And if you follow the Falcons, you need to follow DOrlando Ledbetter. Thank you, Orlando. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Have a great one. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, sir. You too. 10:13. We're going to come back with Chris Wilkerson, the head coach of the Eastern Illinois Panthers, and their star linebacker, Jawan Nixon, from Hillcrest High School. Next here on the Gary Harris Show.
West Alabama real-time news update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
Here at the Tuscaloosa Thread, headlines. Gas prices are steady across Alabama as we head toward Thanksgiving week and cheaper than last year, according to Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan.
In your neck of the woods, most prices are just below where they were last year by 2 to 3 cents a gallon.
Good temperatures, 271 a gallon in Tuscaloosa County. Sharon Lee Windham and Cody Warren Windham have been indicted.
The lineup offering fuel efficiency, advanced technology, and plush comfort. Tuscaloosa Mazda, 3100 Skyland Boulevard East, or online at TuscaloosaMazda.com.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and Three.
The Tide Postgame Show is powered by Pearl River Resort, DCH Regional Medical Center, Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, and Two Dimes.
Need to know what's going on with the Crimson Tide? Then subscribe to our YouTube channel for exclusive content on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris. So the Eastern Illinois Panthers fight song, and it is appropriate because, boy, we're really excited to be joined by head coach Chris Wilkerson and star linebacker Jawan Nixon, who I covered in high school down at Hillcrest, and after an All-American career at Riverside City College in California, he made his way to Eastern Illinois. And I want to thank Rich Mosier, their sports information director, because as soon as this game was on the schedule, I wanted to get Jawan on, and I wanted to get Coach on, and both of them joining us this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Hey, how you doing?
Doing great, man. Good to have you guys. What an opportunity. Let's start with you, Jawan, because what an opportunity to grow up in Tuscaloosa. Like I said, I got to see you in high school, and I was texting with Jamie Mitchell last night about a great football player you were. And, you know, you go out to California – two incredible years there leads you to Eastern Illinois. You're the leading tackler, having an unbelievable year, and yet you get to come home and play in Saban Field at Bryant-Denny Stadium against the University of Alabama. It's got to be a thrill.
Yes, sir. It's definitely like a dream come true. Yeah. I remember growing up as a kid, you know, watching all the great players come through there, you know, going through, you know, Coach Saban, his era. Like I said, I always dreamed on being on the field, whether I got a chance to play for him or I got a chance to go against him. And so, like I said, it's just a surreal opportunity to be able to go against him this weekend.
And, Coach, for you to have this opportunity to bring the Panthers in here, we know at the FCS level, this is an opportunity to have a huge payday and also an opportunity for your football team to play one of the premier programs in the history of college football in this beautiful facility here. So I know the players are pumped up about it.
They are. Again, thanks for having us. It really is. It's an honor and a privilege, to be honest with you, for us to be even on the same field. Again, Saban Field at Bryant-Denny Stadium. It's the mecca, the gold standard of college football. You know, as a college football professional and as a historian of the game and a love for the game, you just have so much respect for the program, the history, the tradition. Every single thing that they do is elite. It's the coaching, it's the culture, it's the schemes, it's the talent, it's the development, the facilities, the tradition, the atmosphere. It's the best of the best, and it is a transformational, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for our players, and we are super excited, but again, mostly honored and privileged just to be on the same field with the talent and the coaches and the tradition.
Well, we can't wait. I want to ask you about Juwan, because I remember him in high school, and he was a tackling machine then, and I remember asking some people about him. They said, well, his height, you know, he doesn't, you know, he's 6 feet tall. But I'm like, man, the guy can play football. He's a physical specimen. You know, he tracks the ball. He has bad intentions when he arrives at the football. But he did what he had to do going out to California. How did you guys find out about him, and what led to his recruitment and ultimately him signing with Eastern Illinois?
Yeah, his recruitment was a little bit up and down. You know, we had a defensive coordinator here last year that started the recruiting process. And to be honest with you, we should have had him here earlier. And just got some things, wires crossed. And anyway, there was a change in leadership. And my new defensive coordinator, Andrew Strobel, went out to California, sat down with Juwan. And I'll tell you what, we were in love, loved everything about him, even more so after spending more time with him in person. You mentioned that he's obviously a physical specimen. He's got great speed. He can get to the football, you know, take on blocks, cover the run, defend the run, and cover the pass. But he's even a better human being.
Mm-hmm.
And since his arrival, he has really, really, really put his stamp on our defense. Guys gravitate towards him. You know, he gets us lined up and plays extremely hard. Everything about him, he's just an unbelievable player in person. And it has been an awesome, awesome experience to have him here as part of our family so far.
Juwan, you to come in as a new player and become a leader on the field and off the field and you know, put together the kind of season. You're an All-American candidate. What's that been like for you? Obviously, Coach alluded to it. Jamie Mitchell says the same thing about you as a person, you know, top flight person. But you're coming into a program and having an impact the way you have. I mean, I know your play talks for you, but to be a vocal leader as well, I mean, how did that come about? I mean, you're a new guy and you're coming in, yet you kind of feels like you're the leader of this defense. How did that evolve?
So whenever I came in during the summer, you know, just like any other time you coming into a program, just like I did at Riverside, you know, the way I see it, the approach that I take, I have to make sure that I come in, whether it's working out or something like that, I got to make sure I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, you know, giving guys a visual expectation of what things are supposed to look like. But also during fall camp off the field, I tried to make my presence felt as much as possible, especially talking with the pads. And once guys see that, and then they also see that, okay, he's controlling the defense, they try to gravitate toward that. And like I said, a compliment to, you know, my head coach Jamie Mitchell from high school and Coach Wood right here about talking about my character. I also try to be the best guy that I can be, you know, on and off the field. And, you know, when guys see someone's a genuine person and they also can play a little bit, you know, it's just easier to have them gravitate towards me. And like I said, I show them the same love and respect that they do me. So, you know, it's kind of easy in a sense to, you know, play into that role.
Are you going to be playing here in Tuscaloosa on Saturday? Not at 100%. Let me ask you about the thumb. Is it, I mean, I guess you'll wrap it. You know, is it broken? Is it just out of joint? What's the situation with your thumb?
So my thumb, I had a freak accident at practice last week. I was doing a little bit of pass rush and I slammed my thumb on one of my offensive linemen's helmet. And then, you know, I went after practice, I ended up getting an x-ray. And like I said, it's one of my bones and my thumb is, you know, kind of broken into three pieces. And so, you know, it's kind of hard for it to move. But like I said, you know, this past week at practice, I've been, you know, I clubbed it up. And then, like I said, been trying to do some alternative move to, you know, to try to get me in position and try to play the best that I can. But like I said, I will be, you know, a little bit limited to what I'm used to doing. But like I said, we're going to go out there and try to make something happen regardless.
I hear you. Coach, I want to ask you about coming home. This is your school. You played at Eastern Illinois. You had a really successful stint as the head football coach at the University of Chicago. You come in a couple years ago and knew it was a rebuilding situation. And then last year, I mean, you had a heck of a football team in contention for the FCS playoffs. Taking a step back this year in terms of the record, where are you at with the program and what are your expectations for Eastern Illinois football under your leadership?
Yeah, you know, certainly, you know, you hear a lot about how college football's changed and it's become so transactional.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're still believers in transformation here and building relationships and building better people. this place and its people, this program, you know, the head coach that I played for and all the other people associated with this program, they changed my life. And so we are still in the ability, in the process of trying to impact, enrich, and transform people's lives. We want every player to develop and be the best person they can be. Certainly, yes, it's a competitive business, and we want to make sure that we win. We'd like them to have a championship experience on the field as well. And, hey, look, we continue to, much like Coach Saban did in years past, focus on the process. And, you know, there is a lot of turnover with your roster, and sometimes it is a little more difficult now to maintain culture and to continue to build a team first mentality and mindset. But, you know, that's the system that it is. And as a coach, you evolve or you perish. And so, look, this place, again, provided a great opportunity for me, a platform for me to receive my education and an opportunity to come home and continue to impact people like I was. And every day is a blessing and an honor and a privilege to lead this program. And, you know, we're gonna work our tails off. We're a hard hat and lunch pail mentality, blue collar group, and just grateful for the opportunity to compete and continue to educate young people.
Yeah, I might have misspoke there. It was 2023 that you had the really strong season, going 8-3. Let's get back to this game on Saturday, because you've already said, you know, what a great opportunity this is for you, what an honor. But it is a football game, and I know your emphasis as a coach and the coaching staff and the players is to come down here and play well. And but you know you're playing an opponent that obviously is more talented. How do you approach it from just a preparation standpoint, a football standpoint, and what would you like to see from your team on Saturday afternoon in this game?
Yeah, this season, you know, for us, consistency or a lack of consistency has really been the key. You know, we did get off to a 2-0 start in our conference, 3-2 overall, and then we've just been unable to maintain consistency in offense, defense, and special teams. We do some really good things at times, and then unfortunately we do some things that don't help you win football games. And so our big emphasis this week has been on being more consistent and just being the best versions of ourselves. Again, we want to put our best foot forward. You know, we know that their offense is extremely, extremely talented. You know, any one of the backs, because they'll try to go to the distance. All the skill guys are extremely fast, physically talented as any group that I've ever seen in 32 years. Certainly ties an unbelievable quarterback and a Heisman candidate. The offensive line is massive and physical and strong, very well coached. And they do such a good job with the scheme. I mean, they play fast. Everybody who touches the football is a threat to go the distance on you. So, you know, we really just want to try to make sure that we have to make them work to get down the field if they're going to get in the end zone. You know, and then on offense, they are certainly a challenge. You know, Coach Womack certainly was here as a defensive coordinator going way back 14-15. And you know, Coach DeBoer was calling ball plays down at Southern Illinois University Carbondale going way back 10-13. You know, so they understand certainly small college guys and have paid their dues and made their way to the pinnacle of the profession. But Kane's defense is multiple, fast, physical. Again, it's going to be a tremendous challenge for us to, you know, even try to get a first down offensively. So we got to take care of the football on offense, and we got to make sure that we try to complete some passes. You know, because, again, they're just so physical up front, it's almost impossible to run against them.
Yeah, and Coach Womack's referenced Eastern Illinois this week with how special that was for him at 26 to be a defensive coordinator. All right, close it out, because I know you guys got a lot of football responsibilities to get to. Jawan, we've already mentioned this is a big week for you. What's it been like in terms of trying to prepare for the game, and also I know hearing from friends and family, tickets, all of that's going to be going on with you. I know it's a football game, but this is also a homecoming for you. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people from Hillcrest High School family and friends that are going to be in attendance on Saturday afternoon.
Yes, sir. That's definitely the case. I have, you know, multiple family members coming. Got, you know, a lot of my friends coming. Got, you know, actually some of my old coaches will be there. Like I said, it's going to be definitely one big reunion. But like I said, one thing that you said, you know, it definitely is a game at the end of the day. And so we just got to make sure, you know, to piggyback on what Coach was saying, you know, we have to make sure that we limit the mistakes that we have. We got to limit the explosive. We got to come in, get ready to play gap sound on the defensive end, and making sure we try to control the game as much as possible. as we can on the defensive side.
And lastly, Coach, the SEC teams come in here. Most of them stay in Birmingham. And, you know, the days of the walkthroughs really are about over for them because they play here every other, you know, every couple of years. But for you, this first experience, I understand you will do a walkthrough Friday afternoon just to kind of familiarize your football team with the venue.
Yeah, I think that's the plan right now. We're supposed to land tomorrow around noon and then do a walkthrough there at the facility around 1 o'clock. Again, that's weather permitting. You know, it's obviously a natural surface and thunderstorms in the area.
Chance for rain,
so,
yeah.
But we are staying in Birmingham, and then we'll certainly make the trip over, obviously, on Saturday. But flying in and out of Tuscaloosa and then staying in Birmingham. So super excited. But, yeah, I would love the guys to be able to see it before Saturday right. So they don't spend the warm-up and the first time being out on the field looking around and you know, with their jaws hanging open.
Yeah, well, that's big, that's for sure. Well, Coach and Juwan, man, I appreciate the time, and good luck. Enjoy the experience, and thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. Y'all have a happy Thanksgiving.
All right, you too. All right, Coach Chris Wilkerson, linebacker Juwan Nixon from the Eastern Illinois Panthers. Outstanding. All right, we're going to take time out. I know we got phone callers holding. We will have time for phone calls in the final segment if you guys want to continue to hold. But we got Jeff Spiegel coming up next from ABC 3340.
Ozempic, semaglutide injection 0.5, 1, and 2 milligrams.
University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Well, I'm running down the road trying to loosen my load. I got 7 women on my mind. 4 that want to owe me, 2 that want to owe me.
Speed time here on the Gary Harris Show. And again, we appreciate head coach Chris Wilkerson and star linebacker Juwan Nixon from Hillcrest High School from Eastern Illinois joining us. That was a terrific conversation. And boy, what an exciting opportunity for those guys and for Juwan in particular to get to come home and play at the stadium he grew up watching Alabama football in. It was, it was a fun interview, and it's going to be a fun day. Hey, good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Gary. That's awesome. I wish I could have heard that.
Well, you can go back and listen to it on the podcast. Yeah, Juwan, I covered him in high school. What a great kid. And I remember, terrific football player. And I kept asking people why he wasn't being recruited more. And they said, well, you know, not tall enough. And yeah, he went out to Riverside City College in California, became an All-American, and now he's the leading tackler for the Panthers. So a big, big thrill for him. All right, let's get to before we talk football, though, I want to talk basketball. What happened last night in Chicago? This Alabama team, with Nate Oates, I mean, the schedule they're playing is second to none. You win in Madison Square Garden against St. John's, who was ranked number 5 at the time. You lose a close one at home to Purdue, that was ranked number 1 or number 2, depending on the poll. And then you play the number 8 team last night in Chicago at United Center, and you get a win 90-86. So great bounce back after the loss to the Boilermakers. Keaton Bristow being back was huge. In 19 minutes, he had 10 points and 8 rebounds. They held their own on the boards, and they went up there, and we saw, when you see the best version of LeBaron Filon, he's as good as any guard in the country. And Alabama got the win. Jeff, huge win.
Yeah, they really did, and you're right. And LeBaron Filon, after the game, said Oates was on him all game long about staying on the glass. And you know, it paid off, and Filon brought it, you know, in the second half. In the first half, he was more of a, you know, facilitator, but in the second half, he scored 19 of his 24 points. And, you know, big-time players come through, you know, in big games. And Houston Millett also coming up with that big steal, you know, to give them, I think, an 8-point lead, you know, with about 5 minutes to go. That was huge. So, I mean, Alabama's just a resilient bunch. And, you know, that 3-point shot, I mean, that keeps them in games. It helps them win games. But more importantly, it keeps them in games because, you know, and then, you know, you have the occasional, you know, defensive plays where, you know, they can get a little space. And it was really fun to watch. One of those situations, like, you know, you got to be on TV at 10 o'clock, and you want to call down to the booth and say, look, I can't make it. I got this.
Yeah, I know. We talked about Filon last night. Incredibly efficient. I mean, he played 25 minutes, 24 points. two rebounds, five assists, just one turnover and a steal. When he plays like that, because he did not have a great game against Purdue, but when he plays like that, they got a chance, as we've already seen, to beat anybody in the country, Jeff. I said this after the St. John game, and I believe it. I think he's one of the top five players in the country. I think he's that talented. And as a guard, I mean, obviously, Rayne Smith at Purdue is a point guard, but, you know, is, I think, the best in the country. But I still consider Filon to be kind of a combo guard. You know, he can do a lot of different things for you. Am I holding him in too high esteem, or do you agree that he's one of the best in the country?
No, I mean, I think so, because, I mean, you know, you look, he's on all the watch lists, and, you know, those people who put those together know something. And, you know, just the fact that last year he was kind of a, you know, he had to kind of, you know, play kind of in the shadow. But then he came out this year, and he's just, he's kind of taken this team over. He's the leader of this team, you know, and he's doing a great job leading, not only, you know, with his voice, but also with the way he plays on the court. And both those things are important. I mean, you can't have one or the other. I mean, both of those things are important, and he's displaying both of them right now.
All right, let's get to football. And before we look ahead, let's revisit what happened on Saturday in Tuscaloosa. And you and I both, we've regurgitated the stats to the point I don't want to even go over them again. But Alabama did a lot of good things in the game, nearly doubling up in total yardage, 10 more first downs. Ty had big numbers statistically, but the miscues. I mean, you turn it over three times. You get clearly outplayed in the kicking game, and it was just too much to overcome in the end. And it was a costly loss for the Tide, Jeff. Your analysis of what happened and why it happened. This is 2 years in a row that Brent Venables has had a pick six for his Oklahoma defense. He just seems to understand how to defend Alabama's offense better than most.
Well, you know, the turnovers were absolutely huge. You know, when I saw Ryan Williams back there fielding punts, my first question was why? Why is he back there fielding punts? When this guy's had the propensity to, I don't even know if I'm using that word correctly, to drop the ball. Now, all I want from my punt returner, that this is just Coach Jeff Spiegel talking. I want the guy to catch the football, hold on to the football. If he gets 5 yards, if he gets 50 yards, I want him to maintain possession of the ball. And when you're in a crowd of people like that, that's not the time to be ducking and darting and trying to, you know, pick up some extra yardage. He was prone to have that ball, you know, punched out of his hand. So I was screaming at the TV when I saw him back there, you know, getting ready to field that punt. And, you know, it's the fifth game in a row that Ty Simpson has fumbled the football, you know, after, you know, being hit in the pocket. And he's just kind of learned to get rid of the ball and, you know, and just have that clock and just have that sense of, you know, when things are going haywire back there. And he's had some issues with that in the last few games.
Jeff, for Alabama this week, there was the playoff ranking show on Tuesday night, which I think a lot of people were reading into that, but it was troubling from the standpoint. It appears that, you know, some of the analysts and certainly what Juracek had to say is setting Alabama up, even if they win the next two games, that if they get to the playoff or get into the SEC championship game and lose, it sounds like they could be setting them up to be left out, which I think would be a travesty. But short term, all of that stuff, you got to get through Eastern Illinois this weekend, and the focus has just got to be on one thing, and that's winning the Iron Bowl, right? And whatever happens after that happens. But you don't win that game and you're out. You don't win that game and the fans are going to turn on Kalen DeBoer very quickly. I mean, we'll talk more about it next week, Jeff, but I don't see if I'm an Alabama football player or coach, I'm telling each other and I'm telling my team, listen, you got one responsibility, win the game on Saturday and then go win the game at Jordan-Hare, and everything else after that takes care of itself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Iron Bowl is that's enough on your plate before you start worrying about, you know, rankings and, and all that other stuff, because that's going to be a hard game to win. You know, this Auburn defense has been playing, you know, pretty well, you know, for most of the year. And, you know, they're going to get after Ty Simpson. You know, there haven't been many nighttime kicks, you know, at Jordan-Hare Stadium, but Auburn's 4-1 in those things. And there's no question, you know, there's some voodoo there, you know, when the lights come on, you know, at Jordan-Hare. And no, their home field advantage has not been that good, you know, in the Hugh Freeze era. I think he was 9-11. But, you know, the Iron Bowl's different. You know, the Iron Bowl's different. 2 years ago, I mean, don't forget, you know, Auburn had Alabama on the ropes, you know, and then 4th-and-31 happened. And, you know, how many 4th-and-31s converted, Gary, are we going to see in our lifetimes?
May not see another one.
Probably once. So yeah, they got to win that game. And then, you know, there's a high likelihood if they do, you know, they'll get in the SEC championship game. And, you know, personally, I like their chances against Texas A&M or Georgia. You know, I think this is a football team, if they hold on to the football, they play really good defense. You know, this is a team that can beat anybody in the country. We don't need to lose sight of that, you know, because they lose a 2-point game, you know, to the 11th ranked team in the country. And, you know, they turned the ball over 3 times. I mean, you know why they lost. It wasn't because they couldn't move the football. It wasn't because they can't play defense. It was because they couldn't hold on to the football.
Mm-hmm.
So take care of that stuff. And this team, I still believe, you know, can go all the way and win the national championship. But they just got to take care of those little things.
On the Auburn side, Mercer is a conference champion. Feeling is, let me ask you about the quarterback, Ashton Daniels. Is he going to sit this game out to try to preserve his eligibility? What are you hearing there?
Well, DJ Durkin earlier this week did say that Ashton was going to sit out, you know, the Mercer game. Right now he's at 3 games, and, you know, you're allowed 4.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to play the Iron Bowl. And it looks like Deuce Knight, you know, the true freshman, mm-hmm. is going to be the starter. Certainly, you know, Knight and Arnold will both play. But, you know, they feel like it's, you know, that's what they need to do. They want Daniels to be able to come back and play a full year next year. And they felt like that was the right decision to make. And you know, and I agree, you know, if you can't beat Mercer, and I know they're 9-1, and they're SoCon power, they're ranked 5th in the FCS. I know this, but they're FCS for a reason. And Auburn's FBS for a reason.
Absolutely.
If you can't beat Mercer with, you know, your 5-star true freshman quarterback and Jackson Arnold, who's, you know, won a few football games in his career, then, you know, you're in kind of rough shape there.
Jeff, what's the latest on the Auburn coaching search?
Just from the outside looking in, it looks like John Summerall or DJ Durkin to me. And I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it, but I really like Summerall. I've seen like a lot of interviews. He's got a lot of grit. He's got a lot of you know, moxie or whatever. But I don't know exactly, you know, what direction it's headed. But to me, my gut feeling is that Summerall gets the job. They retain DJ Durkin as defensive coordinator, and then they kind of move on. And I think this guy would be a good coach for Auburn. I really do.
Going to be interesting. Yeah, I think Summerall's a football coach. I do as well. All right, let me ask you about Lane Kiffin before we close it out. I mean, listen, the guy has got the world by, you know, by its tail right now. I mean, Ole Miss people have done everything. I mean, they have kissed his rear end for 6 years. But Florida wants him. LSU wants him. He's got a contract extension from Ole Miss that he hasn't signed, and he can handle it all. I mean, he loves, I think, being in the eye of the storm. It doesn't affect him, and I think he can keep his football team focused. But a lot of Ole Miss people are upset, and I understand why. How do you think this is going to play out?
You know, Gary, it's one thing if you're 7-3. It's one thing if you're even if you're like 8-2 or whatever. But this is a team that's in position to get into the college football playoff and make a run at a national title. But you can't turn your back on a team in that situation. I just don't think you can. I mean, you know, it's one thing if you're the offensive coordinator at a place, and then you can cut loose and skip, you know, the national championship game like, you know, Nick Saban made him do years ago. But this is a situation where, you know, you're the head coach of this program and you built this. And yeah, I didn't think it would be a horrible thing if he just, you know, got out and took another job when he's in a situation where he can lead this Ole Miss team to places they've never been.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting. Jeff, great stuff as always. I know you're getting ready for a big weekend. We got high school football playoffs round three this week. And then, of course, you got the EOG wrap on Saturday night.
Yeah, absolutely. Right after our primetime game on ABC. And I really appreciate you, Gary. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you. Great stuff as always from Jeff Spiegel. Hey, before we get to this this break, I want to talk to you about my friends at Game Day Men's Health. It's time to get back in the game. Located at 1013 Street East in Tuscaloosa, they offer convenient, expert-backed care for all men looking to feel and perform their best. If you're dealing with fatigue, stress, poor sleep, low libido, and weight gain, these aren't just everyday annoyances. They can be signs that your body needs support. At Game Day Tuscaloosa, they get to the root of these symptoms and deliver treatment plans tailored to your goals. When you come in, they're going to sit you down and start you off with their signature three-step plan. Step one, complete intake and simple blood work. Get the results in 15 minutes. Step two, meet with a clinic director who specializes in hormone therapy and men's health. And step three, begin your customized treatment plan. It's just that simple. The facility is beautiful. The staff is first class and professional. And you don't have to feel tired. If you need that little extra kick in the bedroom as well, they can help you with that with testosterone health and erectile dysfunction treatment. So get by and see them at Game Day Men's Health. Get back in the game today and tell them you heard about it on the Gary Harris Show. All right, we're going to come back with one final segment. We'll have Tommy and Romulus waiting on the phone lines. We can take a couple of other phone calls if you want to give us a ring at 205-342-9904. Gary Harris Show, it's been fast moving this morning, but we're coming back right after this. Hey, everybody, it's Gary Harris from the Gary Harris Show here at Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC, wishing you and your family a very happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept, Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa, Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m., available for after-hours events.
And great drink specials, making it a great spot to catch the game or enjoy a night out with friends. Grandstand, located on 4th Street and Timberson Square, downtown.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans.
Easier for talented candidates to find it, which makes it easier for you to hire them. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The weather stays unseasonably warm today, a mix of sun and clouds with a high of 79. For tonight, becoming cloudy, the low 61. Tomorrow, cloudy with periods of rain, the high 74. Saturday, the chance of a morning shower, the high 76. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 66 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
For more from Tide 100.9,
let it fly!
On Twitter, Facebook, and SoundCloud.
Jason, I be jamming. Like I said yesterday, if they put cameras in the studio and the control room, we're going to get caught. What a song. All right, I can't talk. I can't listen to the music, though, because we got to get to Tommy and Romulus, who has been patiently waiting to get through here on the program. Good morning, Tommy. Tommy, did you drop after all that? Did he drop, Chase? Is he still there? Okay. All right. Sorry about that, Tommy, but we had so many guests. But, hey, listen, there's time to call back in. You know, we still got about 4 minutes here in the segment if you want to ring us back at 205-342-9904. I'm sorry we couldn't get to you sooner, but we were jam-packed with guests because I had the normal lineup, and then I definitely wanted to get Chris Wilkerson on and Jawan Nixon, and what a thrill to have those gentlemen on this morning as they get ready to. Chase, you heard it in their voice. Both the coach, Chris Wilkerson, for the opportunity to bring his team here to Saban Field Bryant-Denny Stadium. And for Jawan Nixon, like he said, a dream come true to grow up in Tuscaloosa, grow up with Nick Saban, play football at Hillcrest High School, and now have to have an opportunity to play on that field and have all your friends and family there. That's going to be a thrill on Saturday. So we're excited about him. Now, listen, the reality of it is, and that's why I asked Coach just quite straightforwardly, you know, what are your goals and expectations? What do you want to get out of this game? They're not going to win the game, okay? So I know that, you know that, they know that. But the opportunity to play good football is what they will be trying to do, regardless of the opponent. But I am happy for them because I know, first of all, I've said this before, FCS is being diminished some by the new system. But for those programs and for all the people who always say, well, hate it when you play these kind of games, you know what? Maybe they're not as entertaining as when you're playing a big-time program. But for what it does for those schools, the payday that they receive to finance their program, and you listen, especially next year when you go to 9 conference games, you can't play a top tier opponent every week. Just can't do it. So there's opportunities for these schools to get to play in an environment that they don't normally play in, get a nice payday at the same time, and create a memory for the rest of their lives. So I said all that to say this: I'm not against Power 5 teams playing FCS teams. I'm just not against it. And those are the reasons why. So, but they're going to do a walkthrough on Friday as well at the stadium. Hopefully the rain will hold off. Hey, before we close it out, a reminder of what tomorrow is. Tomorrow is Friday at the Free. We do it every football game, home or away. I'll be at Industry Hours Pub. Chase, last week we had a huge crowd. We had a huge crowd show up. Of course, it was the Oklahoma game. And then, unfortunately, we lost our signal. It happens, but we got that figured out. We'll be back tomorrow. And again, you know the drill. If you want to come by, they don't open until 11. A lot of people were there last week, but I imagine it'll be a little less folks that want to stop by. But if you do want to stop by, you come around the side door over there by the stage where I'm set up, and you can join us and get a head start on the football weekend. So also that means tomorrow our Bama football trivia contest and giveaway courtesy of T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery, home of the $99 suit sale. We'll have that. We didn't get it to do it last week because we got knocked off the air, but we'll be back doing that giveaway tomorrow. Also, my SEC point spread predictions. By the way, Chase, as I said, real scientific system. I write them down on a piece of paper. 3-4 last week, but still 53-41 for the year in the SEC. The week before I was 5-0, so 53-41, I will take that for sure. All right, that's going to wind it down. Before we do get out of here, lunch is right around the corner. I got so many cool places that I enjoy for lunch. Decades Pub and Grub is certainly one of them. Downtown at Timberson Square, man, those sandwiches, if you can eat both, when they slice them, if you can eat both halves, you're a good man. I can eat a lot, and I have trouble getting both down. And then last night, I swung by there for the Nan Pizza, which they only do on Wednesdays. It is so good. Try out Decades Pub and Grub. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Gary Harris Show. Reminder, catch me on TV tonight with your local sports on WVUA 23. Then back here tomorrow for the TGIF edition of the Gary Harris Show. All that great weekend music live from Innisfree Irish Pub. Friday's at the Free. I'll talk to you then. Get ready for the Miller's Edge coming up next. For my man, Chase Brumfield, I'm Gary Harris. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you again on Friday morning.